Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee kap. Hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our Pali Canon and English study group, and we're studying the words of the Buddha. We're in volume 11, which is titled The Realms of Existence, and we're studying chapters 131 through 140 today. These are chapters that you can study either before or after class, and then come together in the class in order to study them as a study group. What I do is I have somebody read or invite anybody who would like to read to be able to read each individual chapter. Then I share some teachings on that for 5 or 10 minutes or so, and then I open up to any and all questions that you have. If you haven't read these chapters, it's okay. You can actually study here because I'm going to most likely be reading them myself if nobody volunteers in Zoom. And as I read them, you'll actually be able to understand the original words of the Buddha and then some of his teachings. Oftentimes, before somebody studies in a program like this, they will have developed a really nice foundation for themselves in the teachings of the Buddha and then move into a program like this. But nonetheless, if this is your first time tuning in, you'll be more than welcome here. You're more than able to learn something as we go forward in our class today. So I'd like to welcome all of you, whether you're joining for the first time or you've been joining regularly, and invite you to study with us here in our study group. So we're going to start with this chapter 131. This is again in volume 11. And here you can download these from our website, which is buddhadailywisdom.com. You can get them for free. You can take them and go print them, or you can order them in Amazon. If you go to Amazon, if you have access to that in your country, you can order them from there. And we have them here at the temple in Chiang Mai too, that you just reimburse us essentially for the printing costs. So I'm going to take this first chapter, 131, and I'll read it. And these are the words of the Buddha, and then I'll teach it to you to help you understand what it is that he's teaching. It's titled, Abandoning Being Capable of Destroying Discontentedness. Monks, without directly knowing and fully understanding form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, choices, decisions, consciousness, without becoming free from strong feelings towards it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying discontentedness. Monks, by directly knowing and fully understanding form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, consciousness, by becoming free from strong feelings towards it and abandoning it, one is capable of destroying discontentedness. Monks, abandon desire and craving for form, for feeling, for perception, for volitional formations, for consciousness. Thus, that form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness will be abandoned, cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated, so that it is no more subject to future arising. Okay, so what the Buddha is doing here is he's talking about the five aggregates or the five collections or five elements. And he's talking about the clinging that the mind does to these five aggregates and how you need to eliminate them. So first, let's talk about the five aggregates. This is something you would need to learn in order to be able to practice the first precept and also to be able to make your way to the first stage of enlightenment, because you would need to understand these five aggregates or five collections or five elements. What these are what's describing a living being. And the Buddha's definition of what a living being is has held up for 2,500 years because he's the fully, perfectly enlightened one who's fully knowledgeable and wise about all these teachings and the natural laws of existence. So he's explaining to you how to define a living being so that you can practice that first precept where you're abstaining from the taking of life and living compassionately, for the welfare of all living beings. Because anytime you put out harm, harm is going to come back to you. So if you're harming living beings, this harm is going to come back to you. So you need to know what is a living being. And you also need to know what these five aggregates are, is because you have these five aggregates and your mind can cling to these five aggregates, and thus you're going to experience discontentedness. But if you can eliminate these clinging to these five aggregates, you can eliminate your discontentedness and experience enlightenment, where the mind's peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy permanently. So let's go through the five aggregates and be sure you understand them. And then remember, when you're learning with me, you're never believing anything. You're learning, you're reflecting to independently verify, and you're practicing. So as I'm teaching you the five aggregates, you can be learning and directly reflecting on whether what I'm teaching you is true or not. Because this is the teachings of the Buddha. There is no belief in his teachings. He's explaining to you the way the world is and helping you to understand these natural laws. So this first aggregate that he's talking about is form. What this is referring to is the physical form, that a living being is going to have physical form. And you can verify this through your reflection, because you know you're a living being, and you can ask yourself, do you have physical form? And the answer is yes. The next aggregate is feeling, that a living being is going to have feelings. This is the pleasant feelings, painful feelings, neither painful nor pleasant. This is the discontentedness. So pleasant feelings are the happiness, excitement, elation, thrill, exhilaration, euphoria. The painful feelings are sadness, anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety. The neither painful nor pleasant are things like shyness or discomfort. Maybe if somebody sat next to you on public transportation and your body was touching their body, you might think that your mind is dissatisfied or it's uncomfortable. It's not painful, it's not pleasant, it's neither painful nor pleasant. So a living being is going to experience all of these three feelings: pleasant feelings, painful feelings, neither painful nor pleasant. A living being is also going to have perceptions. Perceptions are your views and opinions of the world that may or may not be true. Sometimes there are assumptions that the mind is clinging to, that the mind has certain perceptions, your views and opinions of the world. If you've ever been in an argument where you were arguing about your views and opinions and adamantly declaring that you're right and other people are wrong, that's clinging to your perception. So a perception is your views and opinions of how the world seems to be. Then there's volitional formations, which is just another way of saying choices and decisions. So your choices and decisions, a living being is going to have those. And then there's the consciousness itself. The consciousness is the mind. So a living being is going to have physical form, feelings, perceptions, volitional formations, which are choices and decisions, and it's going to have a consciousness. So you can reflect on this as it relates to you, because you know you're a living being. You can reflect on this in relationship to a squirrel or a rabbit or a donkey or a deer or a bird or any of these other types of animals that you know of, because they're living beings as well. Even a worm or a termite or an insect, anything like this, they're going to all have these five aggregates. And now what the Buddha is describing here is, by directly knowing and fully understanding the five aggregates, and by becoming free of strong feelings towards it and abandoning it, one is capable of destroying discontentedness. So he's saying, in order to get to enlightenment, which is the destruction of discontentedness, you would need to directly know and fully understand the five aggregates, right? Because you wouldn't be able to practice and eliminate your unwholesome kamma if you didn't understand what a living being is. So you need to directly know and fully understand. And you also need to know that you have these five aggregates too. And that's where he's saying, by becoming free of strong feelings towards it and abandoning it, meaning abandoning your clinging and holding on to these five aggregates. Because you'll hold on to this body in the unenlightened state, wanting it to be permanently comfortable, or wanting this body to look a certain way permanently. So when you see a wrinkle or a mole or a pimple or gray hair, you start losing your hair, you get a little bit of fat here and there, you'll be shaken up by that if you're clinging to this physical form and other things as well. So you're going to need to eliminate any clinging to this, making wise decisions to take care of this body, but realizing that clinging to it, wanting it to stay in one particular way permanently, is only going to lead to your discontentedness, because this body is impermanent. then you're going to need to become free from strong feelings towards and abandoned feelings, where you're no longer clinging, you're not longing, yearning, holding on to these pleasant feelings that are only temporary. They're conditioned feelings. They arise, they change, and they fade away. Same thing with the painful feelings. Same thing with the neither painful nor pleasant. You're going to need to eliminate your clinging to those. And the same thing with your perceptions. Because as I mentioned, if you have certain views and opinions about the world and you're clinging to those, you'll adamantly argue and fight about your perceptions of the world. And you'll want to prove that you're right and other people are wrong. And this is only going to produce unskillful conduct. And now you're damaging your relationships. So you're going to need to get to the point where you have certain views and opinions about the world, but you're not clinging to them and holding on to them and trying to prove to everybody that you know about the world and other people don't. And you're right and you're wrong. That's also involving the ego there. And then same thing with volitional formations, your choices and decisions. You're going to need to learn to not cling to these. Say you were taking a flight somewhere. Maybe you're traveling to Brazil or Mexico or the UK or some other place. If you made a decision 6 months before that you're going to travel somewhere, and now you're clinging to this decision, and now when you go show up to the airport, they've canceled your flight, or maybe it's late, you're going to be frustrated. You're going to be angry. You're going to be irritated because this decision that you're clinging to of, I want to go to Australia, or I want to go to Japan, or I want to go to China, or any of these other places that you might be traveling to, your mind is so excited about it. You're clinging to this decision and you just want it so badly. And your decisions that you make are not permanent because as you make decisions, things are going to be constantly changing, which means you're going to need to change your decisions. If you cling to your decisions, it's only a matter of time before some impermanence happens. And now you're going to experience discontentedness. So that's why the Buddha is teaching you to eliminate your clinging to volitional formations. And then there's the consciousness itself, which is the mind. This is where you store the self-identity, like your culture, your ethnicity, your sexual orientation, your job, nationality, occupation. You might have a certain identity that you formed, like I am a Buddhist teacher, or I am American, or I am a husband, I am a father, all of this I am, I am, I am, it's going to stand in your way of getting to liberation and peace. Because if somebody's complimentary about all Buddhist teachers are lovely and kind and generous, you'll get pleasant feelings based on the condition of somebody complimenting you. But it's only a matter of time because of impermanence that somebody's going to say something that's degrading and negative and disparaging. And if you identify with any kind of culture or ethnicity, sexual orientation, nationality or job or occupation, your mind's going to be shaken up in these kinds of situations. So it's not about going out into the world and training everybody to talk a certain way and following rules. The Buddha didn't teach the way the world should be and everybody should follow these rules. He's teaching you the way the world is so that you can train your mind to not have craving and clinging, wanting the world to be a certain way. Whereas if you crave for everybody to talk polite, kind, friendly, and respectful, you'll get shaken up when somebody's impolite, unkind, unfriendly, and disrespectful. So by not clinging to the consciousness and the identity that may be there, eliminating that, no longer clinging to it, you'll be able to get free and destroy this discontentedness. You'll be able to get to enlightenment because you're eliminating the craving and clinging to the five aggregates. So the Buddha here is saying that basically in order to accomplish that, you need to abandon desire and craving for the five aggregates, that you need to eliminate that clinging and craving and holding on to these things. The form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. And then he says, thus, the five aggregates will be abandoned, cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated, so that it is no more subject to future arising. That you basically wrung out the rag. There's no more residual craving or desire related to these five aggregates. And that's where you'll get the peace and joy that there's no longer subject to future arising, that there's no more craving or clinging, holding on to these aggregates. So let me know if you guys have questions. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand electronically and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move to the next one, which is 132. Here, the title of this is, There Is No You There. Then, Bahaya, when for you there will be only the seen in reference to the seen, only the heard in reference to the heard, only the sensed in reference to the sensed, only the recognized in reference to the recognized, then, Bahaya, there is no you in connection with that. When there is no you in connection with that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor there nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of stress. So the Buddha is talking about realizing non-self here. He's talking about not clinging to those five aggregates, thinking that that's who you are as a person. He's saying, when for you there will only be the seen in reference to the seen, the heard in reference to the heard, the sensed in reference to the sensed, the recognized in reference to the recognized. What he's saying is that you don't insert a story into that, right? So like, say I come home and my son is at home and he's sitting on the sofa, and when I walk in, I see a plate that is broken all over the floor. If you walked in and you're clinging to your perception and you're craving to have your house look a certain way, or you're craving for that plate to not be broken, you're craving for it to be permanent, you might start becoming unskillful and start yelling and hollering at your child. But if you're only looking at the seen in reference to the seen, heard in reference to the heard, sensed in reference to the recognized, then you weren't there when that plate fell or broke on the floor. You don't know what happened. The first thing you would do when you walked in, instead of hollering and yelling and making assumptions and clinging to your perceptions and not clinging to any decisions that you make, instead, you're going to say, excuse me, son. You know, you're going to say something along those lines. Hello, did something happen here? What happened? Can you explain to me what just occurred? It might be what you find out is that maybe the wind blew, or maybe the curtain blew from the wind and knocked over the plate, and it wasn't even your child. But even if it was your child, there's no reason to yell and holler. Obviously, they made a mistake. But here, what the Buddha is saying is, don't cling to your perceptions. Don't cling to your decisions. Just look at what's transpiring in front of you. And that is the seen in reference to the seen, the heard in reference to the heard, the sensed in reference to the sensed, and recognized in reference to the recognized. You're not going to be there in all situations. You're going to need to ask questions to understand what's transpired. And none of the things that you encounter is you. That's what the Buddha is saying here, is that there is no you there, right? There is no you there. But the challenge with the unenlightened mind is it's going to cling to these five aggregates: the form, the feelings, the perceptions, the volitional formations, and the consciousness, and it's going to think that this is who you are. So for example, if you used to use drugs or alcohol in the past, you might have been taught that I am an addict or I am an alcoholic. Well, I used to use drugs and alcohol in the past, and I am not an alcoholic. I am not a drug addict. The reason why these things are taught is so that you never ever pick up drugs or alcohol ever again, because it's really unwise to do so. But if you identify with who you are as a person through the decisions that you made, now you could beat yourself up and feel guilty and shameful in the present moment based on things you did 20 years ago or 25 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago or 2 years ago. If you're looking to get to a point where your mind's peaceful and joyful, you won't define yourself through your decisions that you've made at any point in time. But unfortunately, this is what the unenlightened mind will typically do. If you've experienced either drug abuse or alcohol abuse, or if you've experienced substance abuse in terms of using any kind of illicit substance, or maybe you were experiencing physical abuse or sexual abuse or mental abuse, you might be really beating yourself up right now and feeling miserable about these things that occurred in the past. But if you can train your mind to let that go through all the different training that the Buddha teaches you, and don't define yourself through those things, then you can get to a point where you realize non-self, and you realize that the things that transpired in the past doesn't define who you are as a person. Even though I used to choose to drink alcohol and I used drugs in the past, that doesn't define who I am as a person. Those were just choices and decisions that I made, and that doesn't define who I am now. Or say you had sexual misconduct in the past and you were promiscuous and now you're choosing to have one partner or you're choosing to have no partner. You don't have to beat yourself up about that. You don't have to tell your partner about all the other people that you've ever had intimate contact with. That doesn't define who you are as a person. Right now, in the present moment, you're choosing to be with one partner. Or right now, in the present moment, you're choosing to not use drugs and alcohol. And that's what your choice is. And even if you were choosing to do those things at this point in time, it doesn't define who you are as a person. You can transcend all of that by realizing non-self and realize that there is no you there, that the physical form, the feelings, the perceptions, the volitional formations, nor the consciousness defines who you are as a person. And by realizing non-self, the Buddha is saying, okay, this is how you get to enlightenment. When he's saying the end of stress, it's not just stress, it's the end of fear, it's the end of guilt, the end of shame, the end of anxiety, the end of resentfulness and shyness and all kinds of different discontent feelings that are arising due to the mind clinging to the personal existence view. So by realizing non-self, you're going to eliminate a whole host of discontent feelings related to the mind clinging to these things. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. You know that you can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Okay. So I'm not seeing any questions here. So I'm going to move to chapter 133. And what I'm going to do is read 133 and 134 together so that I can explain them together because they're very connected in terms of what you need to understand about these. Chapter 133 is titled The Conditioned. Monks, there are these three characteristics that define the conditioned. What three? An arising is seen, a vanishing is seen, and its alteration, while it persists, is seen. These are the three characteristics that define the conditioned. And now we go to chapter 134, which is titled The Unconditioned. Monks, there are these three characteristics that define the unconditioned. What three? No arising is seen, no vanishing is seen, and no alteration, while it persists, is seen. These are the three characteristics that define the unconditioned. So here, the Buddha is explaining conditioned objects and unconditioned objects. Sometimes people think that the Buddha taught everything is a conditioned object and everything is impermanent, because that's what he's explaining when he's talking about conditioned objects. He's talking about the impermanent nature of conditioned objects. The Buddha didn't teach everything is impermanent, but he did teach conditioned objects and he taught unconditioned objects. So here, when he's saying that a conditioned object, he's explaining the way the world is, that there's these conditioned objects in the world, that they arise, they vanish, and they change. So another way to say that is they arise, they change, and they fade away. That's what a conditioned object is. That's what an impermanent object is. And all the material objects around you in the world are conditioned objects. So the electronic device that you're listening to this on or watching this on, it's not permanent, it's impermanent. One day it will leave you. It will either break, it will get stolen, you will misplace it, you will lose it, it will just stop working out of old age, or something will happen to it. It's a conditioned object. All your relationships are conditioned objects. Your money is a conditioned object. Your job is a conditioned object. It arises, it changes, and it fades away. The clothing that you're wearing is a conditioned object. The body that you're now inhabiting, this is a conditioned object. It arises, it changes, and it fades away. So all the things that you can see, hear, smell, taste, that come in contact with the body, and anything that goes through the mind is all impermanent. Anything that you experience through the six sense bases, it's all impermanent. Okay? So now the Buddha is talking about unconditioned objects. These do not arise, they do not change, and they do not fade away. The Buddha is explaining that as no arising is seen, no vanishing is seen, and no alteration while it persists is seen. So he's talking about these things that are permanent. Right? So enlightenment itself is permanent and the natural laws of existence are permanent. These are the only two things that I found that are unconditioned. That once you get to enlightenment, it's a permanent mental state. In the unenlightened state, you have a conditioned mind and you're experiencing conditioned feelings, that based on some condition, you're experiencing happiness, and that happiness arises, it changes, and it fades away. Based on some condition, you're experiencing sadness. It arises, it changes, and it fades away. There's craving, desire, attachment in the mind that is the condition that's causing these conditioned feelings. That's the cause and effect, the cause and effect. And that's what you experience as a conditioned mind, that there's this arising, changing, and fading away. And that's why these discontent feelings are ultimately unsatisfying. Even the happiness, the excitement, the elation, the thrill, euphoria, it's ultimately unsatisfying because it arises, it changes, and it fades away. Your mind ends up in the painful feelings at some point. But what the Buddha is teaching you and what he's guiding you to experience is the unconditioned mind, the enlightened mind, where by the time you get to enlightenment, you experience the unconditioned mental qualities of peace, calm, serenity, and contentedness with joy. That the happiness that you experience in the enlightened state, it's permanent. It's just always there. It's always on. That's why the Buddha says no arising is seen, no vanishing is seen, and no alteration is seen. The happiness that you experience in the enlightened state, it's not based on any condition. That's why it's permanent. As soon as you form a conditioned feeling, meaning I'm happy because it's sunny, well, the sun is impermanent. So when the sun changes, your feeling's going to change. You're not happy anymore. You're sad or frustrated because it's raining. Or if you say, I'm happy because I have $5,000 in my bank account, well, your bank account balance is not permanent. So as soon as your bank account balance goes below $5,000, your happiness, since it was conditioned, it was based on the bank account, when that bank account changes due to impermanence because it's a conditioned object, now your feeling changes. This is the whole problem in the unenlightened mind. Now you get angry or frustrated because your bank account balance went down. Or if your children do this, you'll be happy. And if they do this, you'll be sad. If your boss or coworkers do this, you'll be happy. But if they do this, you'll be sad. And they can't permanently do the things that you want them to do. So by the time you get to enlightenment, you've eradicated all the causes and conditions that are producing these conditioned feelings. And now your mind is in the unconditioned mental state of enlightenment, where you've purified your mind. You no longer have any pollutions. So therefore, the brightness and the radiance of the enlightened mind, it's permanent. The happiness, the joy is permanent because you're no longer basing your inner feelings on some condition. And that's why there's no arising of the peace. There's no arising of the joy. So there's no fading away. There's no changing or fading away of these feelings because you've eradicated the causing conditions that are producing it. Instead, because your mind is unconditioned, there doesn't need to be any conditions met for the mind to just naturally be happy or joyful or any other mental quality that you experience. It's going to just always be there. It's not going to go up and down and up and down. It's not going to arise, change, and fade away. So here the Buddha is explaining the conditioned and unconditioned. Let me know if you guys have any questions on this. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move on to chapter 135. This one is titled, Where Earth, Water, Fire, and Wind Find No Footing. Okay, so here I can't pronounce the names of the Buddhist students. I'll just call them student. Once student, in this order of monks, the thought occurred to a certain monk. I wonder where the four great elements, the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the wind element are eliminated without remainder. And that monk attained to such a state of mental concentration that the way to the heavenly realm appeared before him. Okay, so let me explain this little piece to you before we go on. So here the Buddha is describing or talking about the four great elements, earth, water, fire, and wind. This is how they used to describe the human body during the lifetime of the Buddha, where nowadays we talk about it as cells and molecules and atoms and maybe bones and different things like this, different chemicals or so forth. They didn't have that understanding back then because it hadn't been developed yet. Their way of understanding the body was through the four elements. So the earth element are the solids of the body, like your fingernails, your teeth, your hair, your bones, things like this. The water elements are the fluids of the body, like the urine, the pus, the saliva, the tears, the sweat, the blood, things like this. The fire element is associated with the heat of the body, oftentimes attributed to digestion. And then the wind element is the movement of things within the body. So like the blood is the water element, but the movement of the blood is the wind element. Or the feces is actually got a lot of different elements in there, but the movement of the feces through the body is the wind element. That's what these four elements are. So they would understand the body through these four elements, and then they would diagnose the body in terms of illness and sickness, and they would prescribe certain remedies through herbs and other treatments through these four element theory. And they even do this today in traditional medicine. They still use this, and it actually works. So they understood the body through those types of things. Essentially, what this student is asking is they're saying, where is it and how is it that we can get to a point where we're no longer reborn? That's what he's actually asking. So now the Buddha's going to go on and talk about this. And they're giving you a little bit more background of the story itself. And that monk attained to such a state of mental concentration that the way to the heavenly realm appeared before him. He went to the heavenly realm of the four great kings and asked the question. When none of them could answer the question, the monk went to the 33 gods, who said, "We don't know, but Sakka, ruler of the heavenly beings, may know." Sakka told the monk to ask the Yama heavenly beings, the Suyama, the Tusata heavenly beings, the Santusata, the Mira Manarati, the Sumana Mita, Paranamita, Vasaka heavenly beings, Vasakvavati, Brahma's associates, and all the way to the great Brahma. The great Brahma avoided to answer and finally said that the heavenly beings believe there is nothing Brahma does not know, but the truth is he does not know where the four great elements cease without remainder. It is the monk's fault that he did not ask the perfectly enlightened one. In the end, the monk went back to the perfectly enlightened one. So here what they're saying is this monk had a question and he didn't go to the Buddha to ask, but he went to all these other places and they couldn't answer his question. So now he's going back to the Buddha and asking the Buddha for help to answer this question. So that monk, as swiftly as a strong man might flex or unflex his arm, vanished from the Brahma world and appeared in my presence. He prostrated himself before me, then sat down to one side and said, "Venerable sir, where are the four great elements, the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the wind element, eliminated without remainder?" I replied, "Monk, once upon a time, sea traveling merchants, when they set sail on the ocean, took in their ship a land sighting bird. When they could not see the land themselves, they released this bird. The bird flew to the east, to the south, to the west, to the north. It flew to the zenith overhead and to the intermediate points of the compass. If it saw land anywhere, it flew there. But if it saw no land, it returned to the ship. In the same way, monk, you have been as far as the Brahma world, searching for an answer to your question and not finding it. And now you come back to me. But monk, you should not ask your question in this way. Where are the four great elements, the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the wind element, eliminated without remainder? Instead, this is how the question should be put. Where do earth, water, fire, and wind find no footing? Where are long and short, small and great, fair and foul? Where are name and form wholly destroyed? And the answer is, where consciousness is quieted, immeasurable, all radiant, that's where earth, water, fire, and wind find no footing. There, both long and short, small and great, fair and foul, their name and form are wholly destroyed. With the elimination of consciousness, this is all destroyed. Okay, so here The Buddha is now referencing something called name and form. This is also one of the ways they would describe the human body during the lifetime of the Buddha through his teachings. If you understand dependent origination, he describes name and form as the four great elements and some other things as well. So here, what the Buddha is encouraging this student to ask is, where do earth, water, fire, and wind find no footing? In other words, how is it that we can get to a point where we don't experience continuous rebirth over and over, where we need to keep taking up this body over and over and over again? How do we get to a point where this body doesn't ever come into existence? And the Buddha says, where our name and form wholly destroyed, right? That's what he's talking about, is how to get to the point where this being doesn't come into existence. And the answer is where consciousness is quiet, immeasurable, all radiant. That's where earth, water, fire, and wind find no footing. What he's saying here is when you purify your consciousness and you eliminate all the pollutions in the mind, then the mind is quieted. It's immeasurable. It's in this unconditioned mental quality. It's all radiant. It's bright, right? There's this brightness that comes through in the mind. The mind is uplifted. And then when the mind is enlightened, it won't produce another consciousness. It won't produce another life. Here's a way to think about it, is if you have a fire with logs in the fire, and these fire is burning with all these logs, the logs are the fuel of the fire. And as long as the fire has fuel, as long as there's logs there, it's going to be sending off sparks. And when those sparks are sent off, they're going to land and they're going to ignite a new fire, right? It's a brand new fire, but it's coming from the causes and conditions of having fuel on this original fire. Right? So it's sending off sparks and it's going to keep sending off sparks. But if you can get rid of the fuel, if you can extinguish the fire and get rid of the fuel, then there's no spark that's going to lead to a new fire. So the same thing is true about the human mind and every other mind that is in existence in the cycle of rebirth, that if it has fuel, if it has fire, if it has that craving, anger, and ignorance, namely craving, then it's going to send a spark that creates a new consciousness. So if consciousness is purified, it's quieted, it's immeasurable, it's all radiant, it's bright, it's joyful, then there is no rebirth. That's what the Buddha is describing here. With the elimination of consciousness, this is all destroyed. So by eliminating the production of a new consciousness, then there is no new rebirth, right? So when you eliminate the fuel that's causing rebirth, the craving, desire, attachment, that's what's then going to eliminate the continuous cycle of rebirth. And there's other places in the teachings of the Buddha where he says that very clearly. Here, if you understand that, then you would understand this teaching. His teachings aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, right? Some of these teachings, you need to understand one or two or three other teachings in order to understand this teaching. So that's why you have a teacher like me to guide you through to be able to understand this, right? I'm like a tour guide pointing out to you all the things you need to understand in order to understand this one particular thing. So it's craving, desire, attachment that is the fuel that's sparking the next consciousness to be created. That craving, if you've ever felt that burning desire, that unquenchable thirst, it almost feels like a fire. Like before you get angry, if you ever feel the heat in your face or in your chest or in your neck or your head, you feel that pressure that it's about to explode, that's the craving, desire, attachment that's producing that. That's the fuel. There you can see that the mind has these three fires that are burning. So when you extinguish those fires, then there can't be a new consciousness. And this continuous cycle of rebirth is destroyed. So let me know what questions you guys have here on this particular chapter. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So we'll move to the next chapter. This is chapter 136. In this fathom-long body, I say, friend, that by traveling one cannot know, see, or reach that end of the world where one is not born, does not grow old and die, does not pass away and get reborn. Yet I say that without having reached the end of the world, there is no making an end of discontentedness. It is in this fathom-long body endowed with perception and mind that I proclaim the world, the origin of the world, the elimination of the world, and the way leading to the elimination of the world. So here what the Buddha is talking about again is the cycle of rebirth, because this particular book, volume 11, is titled The Realms of Existence. This is about the five realms and the cycle of rebirth, which can be independently verified. So here what he's saying is that by traveling, one cannot know, see, or reach the end of the world where one is not born. So you can't learn about the cycle of rebirth through just traveling. You can't travel to the end of the earth or the end of the world, and then that's where you find out where one is not reborn, does not grow old, and does not pass away or get reborn. That's what he's talking about. Yet I say that without having reached the end of the world, there is no making an end of discontentedness. So what he's saying is without getting outside of the cycle of rebirth, you can't end discontentedness. You need to end your discontentedness in order to get outside of the cycle of rebirth. So this first one, he's just talking about beings that are being constantly reborn over and over and over and over again, traveling and roaming and wandering throughout the cycle of rebirth. Just continuing to roam and wander through the cycle of rebirth, you can't understand what it takes to get to the end of rebirth. But by learning and developing and confirming these teachings and training your mind, you can reach a point where you fully understand the world, and now you can make an end to your discontentedness. And the Buddha is saying that in this fathom-long body, what this is this fathom, this is 1.8 meters or 6 feet. So we know that the Buddha was approximately 6 feet tall. So he's saying this fathom-long body endowed with perception, meaning he has certain ways that he looks at the world, and with this mind of his, he proclaims the world. He's teaching you the way the world is. He's teaching you the natural laws of existence. And he's explaining to you what's causing this world to continue to experience the cycle of rebirth. And he's teaching the elimination of the cycle of rebirth. And he's teaching the way leading to the elimination of the cycle of rebirth. That's what he's describing here, that he's explaining how to escape the cycle of rebirth. He's not talking about the end of the world. What he's talking about is how to escape the cycle of rebirth. And this is just kind of like a retelling of the Four Noble Truths. That usually when he talks about the Four Noble Truths, he says, you know, this is discontentedness. This is the cause of discontentedness. This is the elimination of discontentedness. And this is the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. And that's the very first teaching that you need to understand in order to firmly get on the path to enlightenment and make your way to enlightenment itself. So here he's saying that he's proclaimed this world, what causes this world to continue to exist with the cycle of rebirth, how to eliminate your constant roaming and wandering in the cycle of rebirth, and the way of practice that leads to the elimination of the cycle of rebirth, which is the Eightfold Path. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So we'll move to the next one, which is 137. This one's titled, "But because there is an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned." There is, monks, an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned. If there were not that unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, there would not be the case that escape from the born, become, made, conditioned would be identified. But precisely because there is an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, escape from the born, become, made, conditioned is thus identified. The born, become, produce, made, conditioned, impermanent, conditioned of aging and death, a nest of illnesses, perishing, come into being through nourishment, and the guide, that is craving, is unfit for excitement. The escape from that is peaceful, permanent, a sphere beyond conjecture, unborn, unproduced, the sorrowless, stainless state, the elimination of stressful qualities, stilling of fabrications, and completely peaceful. There is, monks, an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned. If, monks, there were no unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, no escape would be discerned from what is born, become, made, conditioned. But because there is an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, therefore an escape is identified from what is born become made conditioned. Okay, so let me help you guys understand what the Buddha is talking about here. When he's talking about this born become made conditioned, what he's talking about is the unenlightened mind. He's saying that there is an escape from the unenlightened mind. And the escape from that is the enlightened mind. He's saying that because there is an unconditioned mind that is possible to obtain, that is the escape from this conditioned mind that is unenlightened. He said if it wasn't for this enlightened mental state of the unconditioned mind, where the mind's been fully purified, there wouldn't be an escape from the conditioned mind. But because there is an unconditioned mind and he understands how to attain that, there is an escape from the conditioned mind, from the unenlightened mind. So here the Buddha is explaining that to you. And then ultimately what he gets to is he says the escape from the unenlightened mind is peaceful. It's permanent. It's a sphere beyond conjecture, right? So this is where some people don't realize that enlightenment is permanent, that the mind's permanently peaceful. You'll hear some people that will say that an enlightened being still experiences anger or sorrow or sadness or grief or despair. This is 100% untrue. I can assure you that the enlightened mind is permanently peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy. So why would anybody do all this work on the path to enlightenment to get to a point where your mind is still experiencing grief or still experiencing fear or still experiencing sorrow? That wouldn't be wise, right? So what you're doing is you're gradually training your mind to uproot these causes and conditions, this pollutions of the mind, to now get to this unconditioned mind where it's the escape from that up and down, and the mind can be permanently peaceful, permanently serene. Here the Buddha is calling enlightenment the sorrowless, stainless state, right? The elimination of stressful qualities. You can see that it's a permanent mental state where an enlightened being doesn't experience any sorrow or grief or pain or displeasure at all. It's completely eliminated because the mind's purified and it's unconditioned. So let me know what questions you guys have here on this chapter. This is 137. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So we'll move to chapter 138. This one is titled, Final Knowledge is Achieved by Gradual Training. I'll just help you to understand what final knowledge is enlightenment. So now that the Buddha is explaining to you that there's this permanent mental state, now this chapter is like, okay, well, how do you get to this permanent mental state? The Buddha is going to explain it to you right here, right? So monks, I do not say that final knowledge, meaning enlightenment, is achieved all at once. On the contrary, final knowledge is achieved by gradual training, by gradual practice, by gradual progress. Okay, so I'm going to pause here for a moment because this is a big misunderstanding in the world about enlightenment, and it's a big misunderstanding in the Buddhist community too. People think in some cases that the Buddha sat under a tree, he meditated, and he instantly got to enlightenment. This isn't true. And you can see it right here in the original words of the Buddha for yourself. And you can verify this for yourself, that you know that anything you've ever accomplished has been gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress. Whether it's learning to read, write, and speak English, whether it's some job or occupation, it's always been gradual training, gradual practice, gradual progress. You've never perfected anything on the first try. It's just not possible. That's not the way the human mind works. So there needs to be this gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress. If you think the Buddha meditated and instantly got to enlightenment, you might be putting a lot of emphasis on meditation, where you need meditation in order to get to enlightenment. But there's a lot of other things you need besides meditation in order to get to enlightenment. You're going to need to gradually train your mind to the enlightened mental state. And this is the original words of the Buddha explaining that he did not achieve enlightenment all at once. On the contrary, it was final knowledge was achieved by gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress. That's how one moves their mind to enlightenment. It took him 6 years to get to enlightenment. So it's going to take you some time. So this is where you can eliminate any expectations or any craving or desire that you might have in order to get to enlightenment, and just realize it's a journey. Enjoy the journey. It's going to take you some time. Okay? So now the Buddha continues. And how does there come to be gradual training, gradual practice, and gradual progress? This is where he's going to explain it. Here, one who has confidence in a teacher visits him, or her, of course. When he visits him, he pays respect to him. When he pays respect to him, he gives ear. One who gives ear hears the teachings. Having heard the teachings, he memorizes them. He examines the meaning of the teachings he has memorized. When he examines their meaning, he gains a reflective understanding of those teachings. When he has gained a reflective understanding of those teachings, enthusiasm springs up in him. When enthusiasm springs up in him, he applies his will. Having applied his will, he investigates. Having investigated, he strives. Purposefully striving, he realizes with the ultimate truth and sees it by penetrating it with wisdom. Okay, so let's go through this, what the Buddha is saying here. So he's saying you need a teacher. This is another big misunderstanding in the world. Some people think that because the Buddha got to enlightenment by himself, that you could do the same thing. But that's the first criteria of what makes a Buddha, is that they can get to enlightenment by themselves, where everybody else is going to need teachers and guides. So you're going to need to have a relationship with a teacher. You wouldn't be able to read a book. You wouldn't be able to bounce around from teacher to teacher to teacher and figure out how to get to enlightenment by yourself. You're going to need to have consistent training with a particular teacher that you have confidence in, that you have confidence that they're either enlightened or very close to it so that they can actually guide you. You're going to need someone to guide you along the way because you're not capable of getting to your enlightenment on your own. A Buddha, or a person who's going to become a Buddha, which is very rare in the world, the last one that the world's currently aware of existed over 2,500 years ago. A person who's to become a Buddha, they have a certain quality of mind that everyone else doesn't have, is they have an unlimited capacity in their mind to remember countless things from this life and their previous lives as well. And they accumulate all that wisdom to being able to get to enlightenment by themselves in their last life. Where you have spotty memories of your childhood because you have a limited capacity. You have to delete old files in order to store new files in the mind. That's why you just have spotty memories of your childhood. But a person who's to become a Buddha and an actual Buddha, they're going to have direct recall of countless details of their current life and their previous lives as well. And all that wisdom accumulates into getting to enlightenment on their own without any help of teachers or guides in their last life. So you're going to need to build this confidence in a teacher. And the Buddha guides you to look at the condition of a teacher's mind. He explains that if you see a teacher who has muddle-mindedness, meaning that they're lacking concentration or clarity of mind, that this is a person's whose mind is still polluted and that you shouldn't necessarily study with that person. And he also says that in order to get to enlightenment, an individual would have to have the true teachings of the Buddha. So anybody who's either enlightened or very close to it, they would be well-versed in the original teachings of the Buddha in his own words, because you wouldn't be able to get to enlightenment without understanding the original teachings of the Buddha. So if somebody is not well-versed in the Pali Canon, which is the original teachings of the Buddha, they wouldn't be able to have gotten to enlightenment themselves, so they wouldn't be able to help you get to enlightenment. So you can ask teachers questions like, is it possible to eliminate anger and sadness and frustration and all these other discontent feelings? If they say no, it's not possible to eliminate those, that means they haven't eliminated themselves. So you would know that they're not enlightened, or they don't understand that that is what enlightenment is. Or you could ask them, is it possible to eliminate the ego? And if they say no, then you know that they haven't eliminated their own ego. So an enlightened being is going to have eliminated the ego. There's all these different questions that I put. There's about 6 or 8 different questions at the end of Volume 1, Chapter 3, where you can ask a teacher all those different questions, and that will help you to build your confidence in whether that teacher is either enlightened or very close to it. And once you build your confidence through asking these questions and observing them in daily life, are they kind? Are they warm? Are they gentle? Are they friendly? Are they loving? Are they willing to help you? Are they patient? Are they motivated? Do they have enthusiasm? You should see all these qualities, because those are all qualities that you need to cultivate in order to get to enlightenment. And if your teacher isn't exhibiting those qualities, they wouldn't be able to guide you in how to cultivate those qualities. So you need to be able to build this confidence in your teacher. And then that's where the Buddha says, okay, visit your teacher. Right? Because you're going to need some instruction and some guidance. And nowadays, you can visit your teacher online. You can do a lot of different ways to visit a teacher. It doesn't have to necessarily be face-to-face. And then the Buddha says, when you visit your teacher, pay respect to them. Because anybody who's teaching these teachings that is truly enlightened, they're not going to be wanting anything from you. They're not going to be expecting anything from you. They're only going to be teaching you out of loving kindness and compassion. They're not going to be charging you a price. So the only thing that you have in order to maintain this relationship is your respect and your gratitude, right? When you're showing appreciation, respect, and gratitude to a teacher, they're going to be more than willing to help you. An enlightened being would be more than willing to help you regardless. But if you're not being respectful, they can't get through that, right? Like, you only can learn if you're going to be respectful. This is going to help you to eliminate your ego. A teacher can't teach through the ego. So if your ego is up and you're not able to be respectful, a teacher can't even help you. So by you visiting a teacher and paying respect to them, it shows them that you appreciate their time because you're not paying them, right? There's no service fee. They're just helping you out of the generosity of their heart. So paying respect to them is a way to show them that you take their teaching seriously. When you pay respect to them, the Buddha says, give ear, meaning you listen to what they're saying, right? That you're interested in hearing what they have to say. When you give ear, you hear the teachings. You're going to learn the original teachings of the Buddha. Any teacher who is enlightened or close to it would have the original teachings of the Buddha. Having heard the teachings, you memorize those teachings. There's a lot of memorization that had to happen during the lifetime of the Buddha. Now there is a certain amount of memorization that you need. Like, you're going to need to memorize the Eightfold Path, not word for word, but you're going to need to know every single aspect of the Eightfold Path. Like, for example, right speech. You're going to need to know that the Buddha taught to eliminate lying, to eliminate slander, harsh speech, and frivolous speech, and then the other things as well. Because when you're out and about in your daily life, you're going to need to remember to speak in wise ways, because as long as you're causing harm to others through your speech, this harm is going to come back to you. So you will need to remember each factor of the Eightfold Path, but you're not going to have to memorize every single teaching the way they did during the lifetime of the Buddha, because they only learned in the oral tradition. Nowadays, we have books, videos, podcasts, things like this, that you don't have to memorize every single teaching, but you're going to need to incorporate the understanding and the meaning so that you can be able to apply it in your life. That's what's important, is that you memorize enough of it that you can apply it in your day-to-day life. So when you learn the teachings, what the Buddha says is you examine them, right? You're not believing the teachings. You're examining them. You need to investigate them, examine them, all right? Then once you examine the teachings, then you gain this reflective understanding. So that's the learning. And then I talk about reflecting. What reflection is where you independently verify whether they're true or whether they're false. You need to learn the teachings. That's the examination part. Then you need to reflect on those to independently verify whether they're true or whether they're false. And now when you gain this reflective understanding, this is where enthusiasm springs up in the mind. It's like, oh my goodness, I've learned the truth. This is independently verifiable wisdom, right? This is something that somebody taught 2,500 years ago, and here I am able to independently verify that it's true. Wow, these are the true teachings. That's where you get this enthusiasm that springs up. When your enthusiasm springs up, then you're willing to apply your will, meaning your effort and your energy, right? You're willing to be dedicated to now practicing these teachings because, wow, you've independently verified them. So you move from learning to reflection, this enthusiasm springs up, and now you start practicing the teachings. You start applying your will. And now you start investigating how those teachings are improving your life and how it's improving the condition of your mind. And then you strive to implement these teachings more and more and more in your life. And then through purposely striving over time, you realize the ultimate truth, meaning you get to final knowledge. You finally understand the entire path to enlightenment. And by seeing it and penetrating it with wisdom, that's where you get to the end of discontentedness. So when you get to final knowledge, which is what the Buddha is talking about here at the very beginning, when you get to final knowledge or final wisdom, your mind is enlightened. You will know the entire path to enlightenment, and you will be able to speak about it effortlessly with anybody who should ask you any questions, because not only have you learned it, but you're practicing it day in and day out effortlessly. So by the time you go through all of these things, then you'll be able to experience this penetrating wisdom that leads to the purification of your mind in the complete elimination of discontentedness. So let me know what questions you guys have here. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, and I'll be able to answer your question. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm going to move to the next one, which is chapter 139. Here, this one's titled, Seeing Non-Self with Correct Wisdom. So right away, we already know that this is about the universal truth of non-self, and the Buddha's going to help you to be able to see it clearly with this correct wisdom. Monks, form is impermanent. Feeling is impermanent. Perception is impermanent. Volitional formations, choices and decisions are impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. What is impermanent is discontentedness. What is discontentedness is non-self. What is non-self should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom. Thus, this is not mind. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees this thus, as it really is with correct wisdom, one holds no more views concerning the past. When one holds no more views concerning the past, one holds no more views concerning the future. When one holds no more views concerning the future, one has no more stubborn craving. When one has no more stubborn craving, the mind becomes free from strong feelings towards form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, and is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. By being liberated, the mind is steady. By being steady, the mind is content. By being content, one is not agitated. By being unagitated, one personally attains nibbana, enlightenment. One understands destroyed is birth. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of existence. Okay, so here, this first part, the Buddha is talking about how these five aggregates that we talked about at the beginning of class, they're all impermanent. This is the reason why you're not interested in clinging to them. If you cling to them and you crave for them to be permanent, they're impermanent. They're not going to be permanent. So that means if you cling to them, wanting them to be permanent, you're going to experience discontentedness. So what the Buddha is saying is, what is impermanent is discontentedness, meaning that if you cling and you crave to something that is impermanent, you're going to experience discontentedness because it isn't permanent. And then when you're experiencing that discontentedness, that anger, the sadness, the frustration, even the happiness, the excitement, or the shyness, or the displeasure, the Buddha is saying, that's not who you are. So sometimes people might say, I am angry, or I am frustrated, or I am annoyed. Well, I am not angry because there's no I here. What's truly occurring is the mind is experiencing anger, or the mind is annoyed, or the mind is frustrated. The mind is experiencing frustration, right? And if you can start to think of it that way, that will help you peel away this idea that there's an I here, because there is no I. And you're going to need to peel that away and eliminate personal existence view in order to get to even the first stage of enlightenment. So as long as you keep saying, I am angry, I am frustrated, I'm irritated, you still think there's an I here when there really isn't. It's the mind experiencing anger. So you can start to disassociate with these feelings as being who you are as a person. That the mind may be frustrated, or the mind might be feeling resentful, or the mind might be shy, or the mind might be feeling guilty, but that's not you. That's not who you are. Now, when you separate yourself from it and you see it as something separate from this being who you are, now you can more skillfully work with it to eradicate it and eliminate it from the mind. So the Buddha is saying, what is non-self should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom, meaning none of these five aggregates is you. It's not who you are. That's what he's saying here. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. So none of these five aggregates are you. When I talk about personal existence view, and we talk about eradicating the personal existence view, eliminating that from the mind and realizing non-self, we tend to talk about the form aggregate and the consciousness aggregate. Because I talk about self-identity being the consciousness aggregate in the self-image, which is the form aggregate, right? That's where the mind's clinging to a self-image, this physical body, the form, wanting to be perceived a certain way. Or the self-identity being the consciousness, wanting to hold on to this identity. But in reality, this non-self applies to all the five aggregates, that none of these five aggregates are you, the feelings, the perceptions, nor the volitional formations. So this is why whatever choices and decisions you've made in the past, you don't need to define yourself through that. These perceptions that you have, these views and opinions, you don't need to cling to those and fight and advocate for those. You don't need to convince everybody that your views and opinions are right. And you don't need to cling to these feelings. The pleasant feelings, painful feelings, neither painful nor pleasant. That's not you. That's not who you are. I am not angry, but your mind is experiencing anger. I am not frustrated. The mind is experiencing frustration. So you can start to disassociate that. And then the Buddha says, okay, when one sees this thus as it really is with correct wisdom, one holds no more views concerning the past, meaning all those things you did in the past, it's in the past. You don't need to cling to it. So when you see the universal truth of non-self with correct wisdom, that none of these five aggregates are you, you don't need to cling to all the things that you did in the past, all the things you experienced in the past. None of that is you. It's not who you are. And when you don't cling to things in the past, then you won't cling to things in the future. Having all this anticipation and this longing, yearning, wanting certain things to occur in the future. And when one holds no more views concerning the future, then one has no more stubborn craving. You've eliminated your craving, desire, attachments. This is where the mind is actually enlightened. So that's what the Buddha is going to describe now. When one has no more stubborn craving, the mind becomes free from strong feelings. That's enlightenment. Towards form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, and is liberated from the taints. Those taints are the pollutions, the defilements, the fetters, by non-clinging. Okay, so what he's talking about is when you eliminate your craving, desire, attachment, your mind's fully purified, then you're liberated from these strong feelings. Now, being liberated, meaning being enlightened, the mind is steady. The mind's steady. It's stable. It's not shaking up anymore, right? With the mind being steady, it's content. Right? It's peaceful. Being content, one is not agitated. You see, the Buddha's talking about enlightenment, that you're not even agitated, not even slightly annoyed, not even slightly having a bad feeling. So whenever you hear somebody say that an enlightened being still gets frustrated and agitated, it's just not true. I can assure you of that. Okay? So being content, one is not agitated. Being unagitated, one personally attains nibbana. When you go 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, your mind hasn't been upset or frustrated or agitated, even the slightest bad mood, you'll know that your mind's enlightened, right? That's how you'll know for yourself. One understands that you're enlightened. And when you understand that the mind is enlightened, then you'll understand destroyed is birth, because you will have studied the teachings close enough to know that you've attained enlightenment, or at least this mind is enlightened, and that at the same time, you're no longer going to experience rebirth, because the holy life has been lived. You've fully purified your mind, because what had to be done has been done. You did what you had to do. You learned the teachings, you meditated, you trained your mind, you developed your mind, you cultivated it. You've done what you had to do. And that was a lot of work to get to that enlightened mental state. The Buddha took 6 years to get there. So what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of existence. You are not going to experience another existence because your mind is enlightened. Okay? So this is what the Buddha is describing here. Let me know what questions you guys have on this one. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. You guys are awfully quiet today. I guess you must be understanding everything. These are kind of short chapters, very straightforward. Now, chapter 104, this is the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. And I teach this very thoroughly in our group learning program and in our Foundation and the Path to Enlightenment course and many of the other courses and retreats that I teach. Usually when I get here in the Pali Canon and English Study Group, I usually just open up and see what questions you guys have, because this takes me 2.5 hours to teach it thoroughly, step by step by step. The Buddha here is describing every single factor of the Eightfold Path, and he's describing how to dial this into your life and actually get to enlightenment. So far in these chapters, he's been talking about certain things about enlightenment, but this particular chapter is how to actually attain enlightenment. And this is a core fundamental teaching. This is why it's in all of our foundational classes and courses and retreats. Anytime that I'm teaching a program or a course or retreat, I'm going to be teaching the Eightfold Path because it's so instrumental. It's a cornerstone in your practice. You would need to know this inside and out, backwards and forwards, left, right, up, down. This is a teaching that you would like to understand and memorize. Not necessarily memorize each individual word and how the Buddha said it, but each individual factor. You would need to know what each individual factor is in order to practice it. Each one of these factors has certain aspects to it. So like right intention has 3 aspects to it. Right speech has 4 aspects to it. And then right action has 3 aspects to it. You're going to need to know each and every one of these. So that's why by the time students are usually studying in this program, they've been studying with me for a minimum of 1 year, more likely maybe 2 or 3 years perhaps. Some people come to this program much earlier if they've had previous experience, and that's fine. People can study with me in this program at any point in time that they'd like. But oftentimes students have already studied with me quite a bit by this point. So that's why here I'm just going to open up to any questions that you guys might have. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. All right, so what I'm going to do then is just thank all of you guys for coming to class and choosing to learn and understand the teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha says even if you understand 1 sentence of his teachings, this is very good for your welfare and peacefulness for a long time. And I'm sure you probably understood more than just 1 sentence in our class today, even if this was your first time learning in one of these classes, because this is pretty detailed stuff that usually a student has a really good framework or a really good foundation in the path to enlightenment before they actually start to study in the Pali Canon and English Study Group. But oftentimes students come into this program without necessarily realizing that, and they start learning a little bit. And you can learn, even if you learn 1 sentence, it's very good for your peacefulness and welfare for a long time. Even if you just understand that enlightenment, the mind is completely peaceful and joyful, and there's no discontentedness in the mind whatsoever. That's very good for your welfare and peacefulness for a long time. And there were other things that we talked about today too. So in our next class, we're going to be moving into the next 10 chapters, chapters 141 through 148. This book finishes at chapter 148. So we're going to study 8 chapters next week, a little bit shorter class. And then if you're interested in studying the Eightfold Path, I'm going to be starting tomorrow a 3-part series on the Eightfold Path, where I'm going to be going in each Sunday and talking about the Eightfold Path in detail using the original words of the Buddha. You can attend by live stream at Sunday at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. 9 a.m. I teach from the temple, and at 9 p.m. I teach from here at home. So depending on what time zone you're in, that might be Saturday night and Sunday morning for you, or it might be Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon or something like that. So you're going to need to look at your time zone, and you can tune in through Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can attend here at the temple in Chiang Mai at 9 a.m. in the morning. So over the next 3 Sundays, I'll be teaching the Eightfold Path in detail so you can learn it, reflect on it, and practice it and see the truth for yourself. And where you can't attend the live classes, they're all recorded. You can go to YouTube, you can go to our Facebook group, or you can listen on our podcast and you'll be able to learn the content. And of course, we're basing all of this on the book series, The Words of the Buddha, The Path to Enlightenment, Revealing the Hidden. And I'm going to be discussing chapter 4 and 5, which is the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, over the next 3 Sundays. I'm going to be going into it in detail. So you can get this book for free, or you can order it online through Amazon. You can take it and go print it, or you can get printed versions here at the temple. So thank you all for joining. You're welcome to attend any of these classes, Sunday, Wednesday, or Saturday, because on Wednesday, we're going to be in part 2 of a 4-part series where I'm teaching students breathing mindfulness meditation. So perhaps we'll see you guys in one of these future classes. Have a very wonderful and lovely rest of your day. We'll see you next time. Sawadee krap.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.